It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh, hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is December 13th, 2021, and it's 1900 UTC, which means, hey, it's time for doing some news. I'm pre-recording. Today is Monday, so I'm going into the office. I think I'm probably going to stop after this week, just because I'm a little... Omicron has me a little more concerned now. And I'm going to have to reorder more at-home tests. For my job, I have to take at-home tests on Monday. On Mondays, before, or at least once every week, and those aren't pleasant, but working at home just is so stifling. It's been really stressing me out. So anyway, such is life. I got to go listen to some bluegrass live, and that was a ton of fun. Apparently they do it every Sunday, so that'll be a new thing I do, and I'll find out their name and stuff and let you guys know. Anywho, It's news time, you know. So, thank you so much for being here. I wanted to mention, if you want to hang out in comm, I'm going to do my best to be in comm during the show. All you need to do is SSH over to sdf.org. If you don't have an account, SSH is new at sdf.org. And once you're there, all you got to do is type comm, C-O-M, press enter, then just press G for go to, and then type a non-radio, all lowercase, all one word, and then you're ready to go. You'll be in the Anon Radio room where you can talk to people. And you can press H for help and equal sign to show the upcoming schedule, including showing you that the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe is happening at 1930 UTC. So yeah, that's what's happening there. It's time to go ahead and get started the way we pretty much always start, and that's...
World News.
That's right, World News. We're starting today in Russia. A teen has detonated a device at Orthodox convent school. A Russian teenager has detonated an explosive device at an Orthodox school near a convent outside Moscow, injuring a number of people. Russia's Interior Ministry says an 18-year-old man, a graduate of the school in Serpukhov, tried to blow himself up. He's reportedly survived. The ministry says a 15-year-old is among the injured. Local media say as many as 12 people are hurt. Russia has seen a rise in attacks on schools by teenagers in recent years. Local media are reporting that the teenager who set off the explosives had survived and was in critical condition in the hospital. He hasn't been named. Russia's Interfax news agency cited a source as saying the teen's animosity toward teachers and students at the school may have motivated the attack. Another source told TASS news agency the former high school student was planning an attack during morning prayers, but his explosive device went off at the entrance to the monastery. Prosecutors in the Moscow region have opened an attempted murder investigation, but the motive for the attacks is yet to be officially confirmed. The prosecutors posted a video from the scene showing police and ambulances. The governor of the Moscow region, Andrei Vorobyev, did not specify how many students were injured, but said none were in life-threatening condition. In a Telegram post, he said all services reacted on time and doctors helped the injured children. So, a little bit of a troubling event there. But don't worry, there's lots of death and destruction today, because it's Monday. People have had extra days to die, I guess. Seven are dead as rescuers find bodies in Sicily. Italian rescuers pulled four bodies from collapsed buildings in Sicily on Monday after a suspected gas explosion. At least seven people have now died after the blast destroyed four residential buildings on Saturday evening in the Sicilian town of Ravenusa. Firefighters say they are continuing to search the rubble for two people still said to be missing. Another 100 people have had to leave their homes because of the explosion. Authorities said four houses had collapsed and another three were damaged during the blast, which was heard as far as 4 miles or 6 kilometers away. Among the bodies pulled from the rubble in the early hours of Monday was Selena Pasquariello, a 30-year-old nurse who was 9 months pregnant. So, they could have said they pulled two bodies. Rescuers used sniffer dogs to locate their bodies. Fire service spokesman Luca Carey said the rubble had to be removed piece by piece to prevent further collapses that might endanger both firefighters and anyone else still under the rubble. You remember, we had this problem in the U.S. in, was it Miami? It was in Florida somewhere when that condo building collapsed because they didn't, the pool was leaking or there was some kind of water leak, and they knew about it, they just hadn't fixed it, and then it blew up. Here it looks like gas leak, and it blew up. Rosa Carmina told Corriere della Sera that she kept screaming until she was found by firefighters. "I just returned home, and suddenly the light went out," she said. "In an instant, the roof and the floor came down, and I was trapped. Fortunately, there are no children among the missing," Ravenusa Mayor Carmelo D'Angelo told Italian media. "Around 100 people have been moved out of the area because of the damage to their homes. An investigation into the cause of the blast is now underway, but authorities believe it could have been triggered by a gas leak." Salvatore Cochina, head of Sicily's Civil Protection Agency, told ANSA News Agency that the functioning of an elevator could have set off the explosions. Explosion. Residents said there had been a strong smell of gas for several days, but operator Italgas said it had not received reports of a leak and the network was fully inspected in 2020 and 2021. So, yeah, anyway, it's just kind of, it's sad that they died. It's also sad that they smelled gas for several days, and nobody called the gas company. Well, don't worry, we got more death. At least two people are feared dead as British and Danish ships have collided. Two people are feared to have died after two cargo ships collided in the Baltic Sea off the Swedish coast early on Monday, causing one to overturn. Rescue boats and helicopters so far have failed to locate the pair who were on the board the capsized boat. The Danish registered Karen Hoge, H-O-E-J, I think that's how you say it, Hoge. The other vessel involved was the UK flagged Scott Carrier. A spokesman for the Swedish Maritime Administration, SMA, said screams had been heard from the water. "It is very cold and dark," Jonas Franzen told the BBC. "The water is about 4°C and the air is about 5°C. Which is 39 Fahrenheit for the water and 51 for the air. The incident occurred in an area of the Baltic Sea between the southern Swedish coastal town of Gustad and the Danish island of Bornholm," he said. Mr. Franzen said a distress call was received at about 3:30 local time on Monday. When a rescue team later approached the area, they reported hearing screams in the water. We have not found anyone yet," he said, adding that divers were being sent out. And the it's very interesting, the map that they have, because the projection... I'm used to a different kind of projection, I guess? I don't know. I'm not used to seeing this sea. And so it's funny, because today I learned Germany has a coast, Denmark is surrounded by water, and anyway, it's like, oh wow, look at this. I learned about a new part of the world today. Two helicopters and several boats for Sweden and Denmark helped with the search, but rescue efforts at sea were stopped hours later. The Inverness registered Scott Carrier also initially assisted with teams attempting to right the Danish ship. It was later being towed to a nearby Swedish port. A search of the overturned Karen Hoge will take place when it arrives at the port. All of those on board the Scott Carrier were said to be safe and well. Cause of the collision's not yet clear. According to reports, the boats were traveling in foggy conditions with poor visibility. The Karen Hoge was heading to Nykøbing Falster in southern Denmark after leaving Södertal near Stockholm in Sweden on Saturday. It was not carrying any cargo at the time of the incident. The Scott Carrier was en route to east coast of Scotland. It's not clear what cargo it was transporting or how many people were on board. But it's a 90-meter-long vessel, and the Karen Hoge is 55 meters, according to reports. Man, that was a wordy story, but really sad. All right, well, we got three or four more stories about death and destruction, so let's take a breath. Just remember, hey, right now, if you're listening to non-radio, you're safe enough. You've got a stable internet connection, and, you know, life could always be worse, right? But, hey, you're here and you're safe right now. Hope you're having a good day. Deep breath. Okay, Let's talk about death some more. Israeli forces kill Palestinian man during a clash in the West Bank. A Palestinian man was killed during a clash with Israeli forces in the northern occupied West Bank earlier Monday. The Palestinian sources identified the man as Jamil Al-Khayal, 31, saying he died as a result of bullet shots to his head following a clash in the Ras Al-Anin area in the city of Nablus. According to Israeli police, special forces officers backed up by soldiers, had arrested a suspect and seized a semi-automatic weapon. When the special forces finished their operation and exited the site, rioters hurled explosive devices at them from short range, risking their lives, police said in a statement. The forces responded with fire toward the attackers and appeared to have hit one of them, who was evacuated from the scene by Red Crescent medics, statement said. While Israel does not have a permanent presence in Palestine cities in the West Bank, forces will carry out raids and arrests there according to security needs, with clashes ensuing from time to time. Excluding annexed East Jerusalem, about 475,000 Israeli settlers live in fortified communities in the West Bank, which is home to more than 2.8 million Palestinians. Palestinians eye the West Bank, which Israel captured in the Six-Day War as part of their future... The Palestinian-Israeli conflict has been going on for a long time, and we're just going to say, okay, thanks, France 24. I appreciate your strong pro-Israel position. All right, let's talk about a couple of deaths in the United States, because... Oh, man.
Uh-oh.
There's a lot of people dead. Kentucky tornadoes. Death toll likely to pass 100, governor says. The death toll from powerful tornadoes that devastated towns in Kentucky is likely to pass 100, the governor says, as hope for finding survivors wanes. Andy Beshear says this is the most devastating tornado event in the state's history, with at least 80 confirmed deaths. Nothing that was standing in the direct line of one tornado is still standing, he said. 14 deaths have been reported in other states. President Joe Biden declared a major federal disaster in Kentucky and ordered federal aid to be made available to the hardest hit areas. Rescue workers scoured debris for survivors, while teams distributed generators to residents. More than 300 members of the National Guard were going door to door removing debris. We're still hoping as we move forward for some miracles to find more people, the governor said. However, no one has been found alive since Saturday morning. Mr. Beshear said a tornado had wrecked places along its 227-mile path. Thousands of people had their homes destroyed though the exact number is not clear. Previously, the longest tornado had traveled along the ground in the U.S. was a 219-mile storm in Missouri in March 1925, and that claimed 695 lives. Such major events outside of the spring and summer months are extremely rare. In Mayfield, the fire station and the city hall were flattened. I don't think there's a pane of glass on any vehicle or property. 8 deaths were confirmed at a candle factory that was hit when 110 employees were believed to be inside. Don't worry. even during a national disaster, the gears of the factory still crush the souls of men. The numbers are far lower than previously feared, meaning that the governor's death toll estimate could be revised down. Kiana Parsons Perez, a factory worker who made a desperate plea for help on Facebook from under the wreckage, told the BBC that other businesses had shut down for the storm and staff there should not have been at work. Understatement. So anyhow, there was an Amazon warehouse that collapsed in Illinois and killed some people. But just in general, There was destruction in Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, Illinois, Missouri. Just that whole area right there had a lot of death and destruction. I won't politicize it, but we'll just say that these are all states that are very frequently, very violently opposed to any kind of handouts from the government. All right, let's keep talking about dead people. One dead and 14 injured in a drive-by shooting during a candlelight vigil near Houston. It doesn't say in the story if the candles came from that factory where those people died, but a drive-by shooting during a candlelight vigil near Houston, Texas, killed one person and injured 14 others. The incident occurred around 6:40 p.m. on Sunday night when a crowd of around 50 people gathered for a celebration at Baytown, about 40 kilometers west of Houston. The sheriff confirmed the death and said the number of those injured from the shooting had risen 14. Three of those injured were in critical condition and were taken to hospital using an air ambulance service. A sheriff added that the others had non-fatal injuries. Police said it was too early to tell whether the shooting was a result of any gang-related activity. No arrests have been made by the police yet, as the shooters are still at large. Police said they are looking for a red Toyota with no license plate. Chaotic scenes were witnessed at the site during the shooting. Witnesses said they heard at least 20 to 30 shots being fired. People were screaming and running to their cars. Two of the injured were the pastor and his wife, said witnesses to ABC 13. One of the other injured victims could be a child, reported the Houston Chronicle. Authorities, however, have not revealed the ages of any of the victims. The vigil was held in memory of a man who was killed inside his home a couple weeks ago. Right as they were releasing the balloons up in the air, when the vehicle came, Mr. Gonzalez told reporters, almost at that exact time as when they opened fire into the crowd. So, really sad there. The way this was reported is kind of funny. Something to listen for or keep an eye out. Whenever you're reading a news story, when you hear something like, police said it's too early to tell whether the shooting was the result of any gang-related activity, that's kind of throwing some bias in there. The author of the piece is at least trying to imply that this was gang-related, and the police said it was too early. It's kind of one of those things, like, if somebody talks about based on a new study that has not yet been peer-reviewed, whenever you see that, you might as well just pretend like you're reading take it with a big grain of salt. Take it as, like, conjecture or, like, somebody reading you a story at a bar or something. Well, you don't necessarily have to die. In Hong Kong, a school is facing backlash after children shown graphic footage of the Nanjing massacre. A primary school in Hong Kong has apologized after students as young as 6 were left in tears last week after teachers showed them unsettling video footage of the Nanjing massacre ahead of its 84th anniversary on Monday. The incident came after the Education Bureau called on local schools to run activities commemorating the massacre in a directive last month. The Po Lung Kuk Hong Kong Taoist Association Yin Yin Primary School showed footage of executions and corpses during the Nanjing massacre to its youngest pupils during a class on moral and civic education. The 5-minute clip, pulled from an RTHK, Romeo Tango Hotel Kilo, documentary on the massacre, showed Japanese soldiers executing civilians and piles of corpses, including babies. The clip was included in the Education Bureau's suggested teaching materials for commemorating the massacre. The Nanjing Massacre, which lasted from December 1937 to January 1938, saw the mass murder and rape of hundreds of thousands of residents in Nanjing by Imperial Japanese troops for a period of 6 weeks during the Second Sino-Japanese War. Beijing frequently references the massacre to drum up nationalist outrage against Japan. The school later expressed regret over the incident in response to complaint from concerned parents. The school added that it would continue to consider students' feelings as it implemented national identity and civic responsibility education. So, that's, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it disturbs kids, but if the kids are old enough to possibly be killed, they should probably know, hey, if somebody tries to kill you, this is how to avoid it. We've gone a little long. I'm sorry. There was just so much death. We had to talk about it. All right. Well, let's go ahead and play a song.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
We're going to play a song, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the world news.
World news.
But for now, here's Weezer with I Just Threw Out the Love of My Dreams. And I believe the female singer is from that album.
Thank you.
every day. I love this song.
Non-radio is your non-commercial.
You're listening to
a
non-radio.
Powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You're listening to a non-radio. A non-radio is powered by SDF, and SDF is powered by you. A non-radio is powered by you. You know, thank you so much for being here and listening. And if you want, you can, you can always sign up and join SDF. If you want to hang out, you can also go to IRC. Not a lot of people hang out in IRC for a non-radio. Well, maybe there are. I don't know, because I'm always in comm. but anyway, there's tons of different ways to communicate with SDF. And please stick around. In just about 7 minutes, we've got the Doobie Skulls Committee with Tobe coming up. And that is a super fun show. On Mondays, we also have Harry Larry at 20 hours. And Harry Larry's a gem. Thank goodness. God bless Harry Larry. He puts out two shows, one on Monday, one on Friday, and they are both just really pleasant and fun to hear. So stick around for that, and just stick around for all the 20-hour shows, 20-hundred, I don't know how to say it, the 8 p.m. UTC shows. They're lots of fun. All right, let's keep it rolling. We got more COVID news. Cyril Ramaphosa, South African president, is being treated for COVID. South African president Cyril Ramaphosa is receiving treatment after testing positive for COVID-19. In a statement, it says the 69-year-old has mild symptoms and is isolating in Cape Town. South Africa has seen a surge of infections since the new Omicron variant was first detected in November. Despite Omicron being highly transmissible than previous strains, more highly transmissible than previous strains, including Delta, risk of severe disease and death is low. South Africa's presidency said Mr. Ramaphosa tested positive on Sunday and has already delegated all responsibilities to Deputy President David Mabuza for the next week. The statement says the president started feeling unwell after attending the funeral of former President F.W. de Klerk early on Sunday. It adds that Mr. Ramaphosa is in good spirits but is being monitored by doctors. So we'll see how that plays out. Good luck there. Jimmy Lai is going to prison for 13 months. That's what's going on right now in Hong Kong, besides showing massacre videos. Hong Kong media mogul Jimmy Lai has been sentenced to 13 months in jail for participating in a vigil marking the 1989 Tiananmen massacre in Beijing. The 74-year-old was found guilty last week of inciting others to take part in an unlawful assembly. Sound familiar? He was among thousands who defied a ban to attend last year's vigil marking the killings in the Chinese capital. More than 24 Hong Kong politicians and activists have been charged over the vigil. Lai was one of 8 activists sentenced on Monday. They included prominent names like journalist-turned-opposition politician Gwyneth Ho and lawyer Chow Hang Tung. The sentences for the 8 range from 4.5 months to 14 months. Judge Amanda Woodcock announced the sentences following a mitigation hearing in which Lai's lawyers presented a handwritten letter he had written from prison. In the letter, Lai said he was willing to suffer the penalties of his decision. If commemorating those who died because of injustice is a crime, then inflict on me that crime and let me suffer the punishment, so I may share the burden and glory of those young men and women who shed their blood on 4th of June 1989. Earlier in the trial, Lai had argued that he had lit candles during the vigil in a personal capacity and had not incited others to join the unauthorized rally. However, Judge Woodcock dismissed the arguments and said their participation was an act of defiance and protest against the police, which isn't what he was charged with, though. Lai, who is already serving a prison sentence for an earlier charge, will serve his latest sentence concurrently. He's the founder of the now-defunct Apple Daily newspaper in Hong Kong and has been one of the most prominent supporters of the city's pro-democracy movement. The tycoon faces other charges, some under a sweeping national security law imposed last year, which can carry a maximum term of life in prison. Hong Kong was handed back to China in 1997 under a deal which gave the former British colony freedoms not available in the mainland. Dozens of activists have been arrested, jailed, or fled the territory since the security law came into force. So yeah, if you'll remember, they were supposed to be free and be independent for 50 years after the transition, after UK gave it back. But don't worry, it finds a way. Oppression and stuff, it always finds a way. What do they say?
Resistance is futile.
Now, in the United States, I want to share this story with you because one of the things that I think is lost on people, especially if you're not in the United States, is just how just merely existing as a black person in the United States, or as just as a person who's not accepted as a white person, is just dangerous and inherently dangerous. Banking while back, video captures man being put in handcuffs for trying to cash his own paycheck. In a blatant incident of racial profiling, a black man was handcuffed and escorted out of a bank for fraud when he tried to cash his $900 paycheck in Minnesota. Body cam footage obtained by local news station KTSP showed that Joe Morrow, age 23, was threatened with arrest at a U.S. bank branch in Columbia Heights last year, though he had an account with the bank and had already shown his identification card. Bank manager John Asquith allegedly told the police that Mr. Morrow had a fake check, despite already verifying with his employer that it was real. Mr. Morrow used to work at a grocery store distributor in Hopkins. According to Mr. Morrow, the manager walked over to him and said, "Joe Morrow, your check is fake. You people always come in here with fake checks." He then called the police because he'd received a lot of fraudulent checks. Mr. Morrow told the manager that he worked at the place that had issued the check. "I work there, bro, and I'm going to report you too, bro. This is racial." Responding to him, Sergeant Justin Pletcher said, "Joe, I need you to calm down first, okay? Don't say anything stupid because you're just going to get arrested for it." And it's like, why is he going to be arrested? Anyway, soon another police officer arrived, and the manager asked him to take Mr. Morrow to another office. He was handcuffed and quickly stood up from his chair. "I didn't threaten him. I got up. I'm mad," Mr. Morrow said. The guy told the officer, "Can you get him out of my office? He might take something." That's when I got super mad. "I'm going to touch something on your desk." However, in the incident report, Sergeant Pletcher wrote that Mr. Morrow flexed at John in a threatening manner, which he disputes. Rich Hector, Mr. Morrow's attorney, asked the U.S. bank for a settlement and an explanation, to which the bank has reportedly agreed. On Friday, President and Chief Executive of U.S. Bank Corp., Andy Cecere, issued an apology to the Minneapolis community. "I'm deeply sorry for where we failed and accept full responsibility." But what that responsibility is, doesn't say. Mr. Morrow's experience has added to that of many other black Americans who have been documented such instances under social media hashtag BankingWhileBlack. So anyway, that's just racism live and well in the United States. We're about to run out of time, so in the remaining seconds, just wanted to let you know, in the 1990s, Vladimir Putin has revealed he moonlighted as a taxi driver, or he drove a car for hire for a little while after the fall of the Soviet Union.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
I'm going to bring it up tomorrow, but there's a cool story about holograms, which is pretty dang neat. Enjoy the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Seven.